This is Jim Inkster, and welcome to Talk Louisiana. We begin our show today with a tragic story about a shooting at Grambling State University last night. A sheriff's spokesman says a student and his friend were fatally shot at Grambling after an altercation that began in a dorm room. The shooter reportedly fled the scene early today, and with us is Will Sutton, who's director of communications at Grambling State University. Will, I know this is a tragic day at the university, but what do you know at this point?
What we know is that there is a unknown suspect who shot these two victims. Our police chief, Chief Gene Cabanis, and his team were very quickly on the scene, and soon after that got the Lincoln Parish Sheriff's Office involved. Because of the resources of the sheriff's office, they have assumed primary responsibility for the investigation, and our team is being a full partner with cooperating and assisting with that investigation this morning. Meanwhile, classes are continuing as scheduled. Business office hours are in effect for today, and while we did ask students to stay in their dorms overnight, we have classes and business office hours for them and others to participate as we would normally. We are asking anyone who has any information to call the Crime Stoppers local hotline. We do have some leads, but those are for the police officers to follow up on, and nothing that we would really discuss at this point. And we're looking forward to as quick of a resolution as possible to this tragic situation. Our thoughts and prayers are with the families of the victims, and we are continuing to cooperate with the authorities, and we want our students, faculty, and staff to cooperate with any information that they might have.
Are you at liberty to reveal the people who were killed?
There are two. One is Quantavius Caldwell, and the other is Earl Andrews, both 23, from Farmerville, which is in Union Parish, next parish over from where we're located in Lincoln Parish.
Both 23 years old, one a student, and
yes,
the other...
that's Andrews. Mm-hmm.
The other a friend of the student. And
that's correct.
Exactly where did the altercation and the shooting take place?
Outside of one of our dorms on the courtyard.
And when did you find out about it?
Right around midnight, and I got word around 1 a.m.
These things rarely happen on a college campus, for goodness sakes. That is a pleasant development, but for example, at LSU, there's only been one shooting in all the years of campus life. But you've got 5,000 students, and the classes are going on. But what is the mood on campus this morning?
It's the best we want to experience in any given day, any given week. Of course, it's homecoming week, so we really are very shaken up by it, and doing the best that we can to have business as normal.
Now, lastly, Will Sutton, last month, a student was wounded on campus. I'm sure there is a concern, and legitimately so, from some that this is something that may be going on beyond today. Can you allay the fears and concerns of those who might have that assessment of the situation?
Well, Grambling State University is an open campus. We have campus roads and streets, but we have public roads and streets. And our police department does a good job with making sure that our students are aware of the safety tips and things that they should be aware of and cautious. But being an open campus, that means that people who are affiliated with the university as well as people who are not affiliated with the university come on campus on a regular basis. We do suggest that students be particularly cautious with who they let into their dorm rooms, and be cautious as they walk and drive about campus. This is an isolated incident, but involving particular individuals. But we are certainly aware that anything can happen at any time, which is why we are grateful that this is such an unusual
situation. Well, we thank you for joining us, and I know you're extremely busy right now, so appreciate your words, and hopefully it will be a better day as we move along. Certainly a horrible way to start this morning, but thank you so much, Wilson. Take care.
Okay, thank you.
Bye. And we're about to be joined by two distinguished journalists, and Dan Fagan and Lamar White. Do want to note that later in the hour, we'll hear from Dr. Laura Cassidy. That's the plan, the wife of U.S. Senator Bill Cassidy, and Laura Cassidy is involved in the Louisiana Key Academy, which is a school designed to assist dyslexic children. And we lost Antoine Fats Domino overnight. WWL Television is reporting Fats Domino is gone at the age of 89, and what a life he led, and a true Louisiana legend. Lamar White is with us. He is the publisher of the Bayou Brief. Many years he was blogging when others were not at sinlamar.com. And now he is on our show with Dan Fagan, who's a longtime journalist. Many years he was a reporter at WAFB here in Baton Rouge, went off to Alaska, is back, and he writes a column for The Advocate. And last week he struck a nerve with a column that the headline reads, "In violence-stricken New Orleans and Baton Rouge, Democrats must cut race bait and battle crime." One of the segments from Dan's column: if Democrats would stop their race baiting and instead focus on fighting crime, they wouldn't be so bad at governing, writes Dan Fagan. They just really aren't very good at it. Locking up those who make neighborhoods dangerous has a domino effect in that it brings in investment from otherwise reluctant businesses unwilling to spend capital in crime-infested neighborhoods. The free market is all about the bottom line. Starting a business in unsafe neighborhoods is not good for the bottom line. Dan, I'm sure when you wrote these words, you knew you were going to get a response. What's your take on what you wrote a week later, and are you regretful in any way about anything that you expressed in this column?
I'm not regretful. I stand by what I wrote. And as far as the reaction, yeah, I knew that what I said was controversial, but it's what I believe. It came from my heart.
All right. Lamar White, your thoughts. You spent a lot of time in Louisiana, grew up in central Louisiana, and you have been critical of Dan and some other columns that he's written. What about this one?
Well, I think there's a reason it was controversial. I mean, first of all, Dan began his column with sort of a nostalgic statement about the halcyon days of 1870, which is, he said, the last time a Republican served as mayor of New Orleans. Of course, anybody that knows Louisiana history knows what was occurring in the 1870s, Reconstruction. The mayor at the time was a guy named Benjamin Franklin Flanders, who was actually a liberal, union sympathizer, probably more aligned with Mitch Landrieu. I didn't really get the point of beginning with a nod to Reconstruction. But the real point that I think a lot of people felt was offensive was that Louisiana is already the prison capital of the world. And the implication seemed to be that we should double down on incarceration.
Dan, is that what you were stating?
Well, not doubling down. I don't really think that we should lock people up based on how we compare with other states. I think each case should be determined individually, whether the person's violent, and if they've shown a propensity to be violent, then they should be locked up. And that should be the only determining factor in whether someone is sent to prison, not how we compare to other states. Because the bottom line is, if someone has shown that they are unable to control themselves and are violent and are career criminals, then they should be locked up. And that's my basic point behind the column. There are people in our state, and they're a very small percentage of our citizens, but they've just proven themselves to be violent, and they may someday change. I don't know. I hope they change. I wish they would change. But until they do, they need to be kept off our streets. And my main point in the column was that what we get a lot from politicians is that the reason that we have crime and poverty in our state is because of oppression. And my purpose was to try to draw the connection between crime and poverty. And the crime, when a neighborhood has unsafe streets, businesses aren't going to be locating there because it's just too expensive. And until we keep neighborhoods safe, they're going to be poor. And that's really the whole point behind the column.
Lamar?
Well, there's just a lot to unpack there. I mean, first of all, our rate of gun proliferation in Louisiana is 33 times higher than the national average. And we know that gun proliferation, more than any other factor, is directly correlated to the proliferation of violent crimes. We also know that the gun lobby is sort of in the pocket of, Republican politicians are sort of in the pocket of the gun lobby.
All right, we do have to take a break, but we will return with Lamar White and Dan Fagan right here on Talk Louisiana. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us. 877-217-5757 is your number. 877-217-5757. Locally in Baton Rouge, 297-5633 works. And you can always email us, talk@talklouisiana.org. Ali Baltazar is producing our guest for a little while longer. Dan Fagan, columnist for The Advocate, longtime reporter, spent a few years covering news at WAFB here in Baton Rouge. And also Lamar White, who's been blogging for well over a decade at sendlamar.com, and his latest venture is the BayouBrief.com. We're talking about Dan Fagan's column of a week ago, in which Dan certainly opened a discussion that we're continuing right here about the reasons for crime and how it affects economic development. The headline again, in violence-stricken New Orleans and Baton Rouge, Democrats must cut race bait and battle crime. Dan writes, Democrats are constantly chirping about inequality, yet they do everything in their power to thwart the solution to the problem, which is the free market. The beauty of the free market is it doesn't see color. It gravitates toward demand, excellence, value, and ingenuity. Produce something of worth, and it doesn't matter what color you are, the free market will reward you. Want more equality? Enable the free market. Want more inequality? Squash the free market. Now, we cut you short going to the break, Lamar White, but I know you probably disagree vigorously with the column or the paragraph I just read from Dan's column.
Yeah, I do. I mean, I would say that, on a municipal level, the free market, he says the free market follows private sector investment. But I think in the context of urban development, private sector investment pretty much almost always follows public infrastructure spending. So when the government disinvests from one neighborhood or part of town and then reallocates spending to another part of town, that's not the free market at work. It's actually corporate welfare for developers at work. And then, the other issue is redlining. It was an issue that occurred for many decades, and there are many ways in which black families were denied loans given to even less qualified whites. So it seems to hastily ignore a vast and enormous body of research about the realities of race relations in this country and the effects that had on development.
Dan?
Well, I guess Lamar and I have a different understanding of the free market. I think it works based on meeting needs and making profits. I just don't think, for the most part, most people engaged in the free market see anything other than the color green. They want to make money. And frankly, it would be foolish of them to be discriminatory based on race. If you're trying to make money and you're going to exclude part of the populace simply because of the color of their skin, you're not a very, very, very good business person. So I think we have a fundamental disagreement over how the free market works.
Before we paused, Lamar made a statement about guns and their contribution to the issues that you express that are certainly alive and not so well in these communities. Do guns and perhaps politicians' connections to the gun lobby, do they contribute to the problem?
Well, if you're asking me if criminals use guns, yes. Do I think that we should take guns away from law-abiding citizens? No. robbing a liquor store, robbing a hardware store, robbing any kind of store is illegal now. If you say it's also illegal to own a gun, well, why would you think that the criminal who robbed the hardware store would also say, well, I can't use a gun now because that's illegal? It just doesn't make sense to me.
Lamar?
Well, I don't think that was Jim's question to you, Dan. I mean, the point I was making is that our rate of gun proliferation in Louisiana is 33 times higher than the national average. And I think that does speak volumes about why there's a proliferation of violence here. And it has nothing to do with anyone wanting to take away a law-abiding person's gun or infringe on anyone's Second Amendment right. It's just, let's face reality, you know?
Well, for 28 consecutive years, Louisiana's been the most murderous state per capita in the United States, and it's primarily because of New Orleans and Baton Rouge and some other urban areas, but those are where many of the murders occur, and they're the two biggest places in our state. But, Dan, is regulation the answer to our problems?
Regulation meaning what?
Regulation of guns, perhaps registration.
So what do you mean by how do you regulate guns?
Well, we could register all guns. We could have training before somebody buys a gun, like we have training before somebody gets a driver's license.
So you want the criminals to be better at shooting people? I don't understand how that changes anything. If someone's a lawbreaker, if someone doesn't care about the law, outlawing guns is not going to change their habits.
I don't think anybody said anything about outlawing guns.
Well, okay, making it harder to get a gun. The criminal is not going to jump through the hoops set out by the government necessary to get a gun. You can put all the delays and all the hoops and hurdles and roadblocks you want to gun ownership. The criminal doesn't care about that. They're a criminal. They're going to break the law. Laws are not relevant to their thought process. So you can continue to make it harder to buy a gun. All that's going to do is affect law-abiding citizens.
Should we drive a car without getting proper instruction on how to drive that car?
Well, I mean, I don't know. You're talking about that little test we take before we get our driver's license? Is that the proper instruction you're talking about?
Well, there's a little more to that. There's a little more to that.
Well, what instruction do I need to drive an automobile?
Well, when you,
I mean, I don't have to go
at this point. At this point, you're probably okay, Dan. But I imagine when you first started, you needed some instruction. You didn't just get in that car and go, did you?
Well, no. Typically, if you're a teenager, your parents will teach you how to drive a car. So you want the government to start doing that? I don't quite understand where you're going with this argument.
Right. Dan downtown calling Dan Fagan and Lamar White. Dan, good morning to you. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Good morning. Mr. Fagan, can there really be a free market when the business interest and their lobbyists essentially write the laws that let, for example, Wall Street fat cats ruin the economy but not go to jail and then get bonuses after a taxpayer bailout?
Well, no, I agree. There are many forces out there that are trying to thwart the free market, and both parties are guilty of being a part of that, Republicans and Democrats. Typically, Democrats will try to thwart the free market by kowtowing to labor union demands, and typically Republicans will thwart the free market by trying to give one corporation or one company a leg up over another using the government. So there are a lot of anti-free market forces out there, but that doesn't take away from the power of the free market to not only produce equality, because it is demand-based, but to also fight inequality.
Lamar?
I'm not even sure to begin. I just want to say, with respect to the Second Amendment issue, I think it's ad absurdum to suggest that we should not have laws because there are criminals that would break the laws anyway. That's like saying there shouldn't be a law against murder because people are going to murder anyway. I think it's a slippery
slope. Well, I'm not saying that, Lamar. I'm not saying there shouldn't be laws.
I follow your logic to its conclusion.
All right, Jim and Walker. Jim, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana with Lamar White and Dan Fagan.
Good morning, gentlemen. Yeah, it would be great if the free market worked like a really free market. I think now to date there had been 80 years the Louisiana legislature giving tax breaks to corporations. Just, you know, here you go, have another one. And that's not fair. I mean, corporations should pay their fair share of local taxes.
All right. Thank you, Phil, in Jefferson Terrace. Jim and Walker, you hang on, and we're about to go to a break, but if you'd like to respond briefly, Dan, to Phil in Jefferson Terrace.
Well, tax breaks don't thwart the free market. It's when you pass legislation that gives one business a leg up over another business. If a tax rate is blanket and it affects all corporations, like a cut in the corporate tax, that doesn't thwart the free markets. But if you give certain corporations that, say, produce windmills tax breaks, then you give that type of industry a leg up over other industries, and that's what the free market is thwarted.
877-217-5757. Advocate columnist Dan Fagan, who has opened a discussion with his column about violence in Baton Rouge and New Orleans and how Democrats, in his opinion, must cut race bait and battle crime, and Lamar White of the Bayou Brief. They're back after this pause. This is Jim Engster. Thank you for joining us. Ali Baltazar is producing. Your number is 877-217-5757. You can email us talk@talklouisiana.org. Journalist Lamar White and Dan Fagan, Lamar White of the Bayou Brief, and Dan Fagan, columnist for The Advocate, and they are commenting on Dan's column of last week in which he chided primarily Democrats for issues in crime-ridden areas, and he was not charitable in his comments toward leaders who were from the Democratic Party, saying in violence-stricken New Orleans and Baton Rouge, Democrats must cut race bait and battle crime. Jim and Walker. Jim, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana with Dan and Lamar.
Morning, gentlemen. Dan, I'm really sorry that you were obviously sick during all your, you know, American history and civics classes, because the last time I saw, we had Jim Crow when the entire country decided that they did not want black money, that it wasn't just all about green. And this has not really fundamentally changed. Our president of the United States was, in fact, fined because he was discriminating against black tenants. So where do you base anything in your column on other than just something you've decided to pull whole cloth out of fiction?
All right. Thank you, Jim. Dan?
Obviously, there's no doubt that our country has had a history of racist activity, and it's disgraceful. It's heartbreaking. It's a real stain on our past as a nation. But I don't believe that it is nearly as prevalent as it was back in Jim Crow days. I don't think it exists much at all anymore. And I know that there are a lot of people who base their political philosophy on this notion that we're a racist nation, we're an oppressive nation. I don't believe that's the case anymore. I'm not saying it doesn't exist, but I think the opportunity available to people today far outweighs any racism that remains in the marketplace.
Lamar?
I mean, I think that's very idealistic and naive. If anything, I think of course, society is not as racist as it was during the Jim Crow era, and I don't think the caller was claiming that at all. But we have a president in the United States right now who, for years, claimed that the former president, Barack Obama, was not born in the United States. And I think clearly that's a dog whistle to racists. And there's many other examples to Sheriff Caddo Parish last week. His comments that harken back to slavery. This percolates frequently, and I don't think we should put our blinders on and be naive.
All right. Scott writes, Dan is missing on the gun issue. What Dan is missing is that the vast and easy availability of guns in Louisiana is the problem. Countries with strict gun regulations have far fewer gun deaths per capita, and that's simply a fact. That's from Scott. Dan, would you respond?
I just disagree that stricter gun control means less violence. I don't think that is proven out in American cities and in cities with heavy crime. Most of them are very strict on gun control, and they're some of the most violent cities in America.
Lamar?
I don't think the reader was saying that at all. I think what they were suggesting is internationally, if you compare, you know, other countries with stricter laws, you'll find a dramatic decrease in violence.
877-217-5757. Still time to get in. Paul in Opelousas, you're on with Lamar White and Dan Fagan. Hi, Paul.
How are you doing, Jim?
Fine.
Great sub, especially with Louisiana and going with, especially what happened last night in Grambling. If you were to pick up most chief of police and sheriffs and ask them where their most incidents of gun violence is, it's the people who lawfully bought a gun. Domestics, I got mad at you, you got mad at me. So the question should be asked, like you said, should a person who buys a gun be held liable for the action of that gun just like they buy a car? I trail ride. When I buy a horse, if the horse does something, I'm liable for the horse. Should a person who buy a gun be liable for the action of that gun if it's stolen, if you haven't claimed it, and should be trained to use it? I think you should have guns, but should you be trained to use it?
All right. Thank you, Paul. Dan, your thoughts?
I'm not quite sure. Is the caller saying that if you buy a gun and it's stolen and someone shoots someone, that you as the original purchaser of the gun should be held liable? Was that the question?
Well, he mentioned that, but beyond that, what if you give it to somebody and they shoot somebody? Say an incident happens in your home. Should a person be liable for having a gun that was unprotected?
No, I think the person, if a gun is used in the commission of a crime to hurt someone, the person who pulled the trigger should be held liable. If someone steals your gun, if someone borrows your gun and you don't understand and you don't know that they're up to no good, I think it should be the trigger puller that should be held liable.
All right. Your column, you say, the Democrats are most diabolical when they convince those in poor neighborhoods to fear the so-called racist cops instead of the violent gang members. This limits the ability of police to fight crime and lock up the violent. It's why the NFL players living in mansions kneeling during the national anthem is so grotesque. Meanwhile, those in poor neighborhoods of Baton Rouge and New Orleans continue to live in fear the next flying bullet might catch a family member. Strong words, Dan Fagan. You obviously were intending to spark a debate, and that you have done. But is it more complex than you present this issue?
Well, I mean, obviously there's exceptions to all rules, but I think people understand that I'm writing, generically speaking, that the problems in most of these crime-ridden neighborhoods are not the police. It's the criminals. It's the violent criminals who have no regard for life or property. And, of course, there are some cops out there who are less than altruistic, obviously, but I don't think that that's the rule. I think that's the exception. And to look at a neighborhood that has crime out of control, to blame the police for it, to me, just seems insane.
Lamar?
I just think that's so simplistic and so patronizing. I mean, but first of all, most of these, you know, crime neighborhoods, quote unquote, the people that are committing these crimes are teenagers, almost overwhelmingly teenagers or young adults, and that after the age of 30, you're exponentially less likely to commit a violent crime if you haven't already. So we need to be investing in intervention, in education, and the idea that we should just beef up law enforcement and that we should instill greater respect for law enforcement, which I think does exist already, is naive, and it totally misapprehends the realities of what's going on in the ground. I live in one of these neighborhoods, you know. I just think it's patronizing. I'm sorry.
All right. A listener notes, this is Melanie, that both of you have written about the race for mayor in New Orleans. Lamar, how do you see that contest?
I mean, I think it's going to be great no matter what. An African-American female will be the mayor of New Orleans no matter what, and that means that for the first time in Louisiana's history, an African-American female will be the mayor of the top three cities in the state of Louisiana. So I'm excited about it. I think LaToya Cantrell is running a fantastic campaign, and I think that she's probably got an edge. I'm supporting her in this election.
Dan, what do you think?
Well, I think they're very similar, the candidates. I've watched the debates. I've read as much about it as I can, and I don't see that much distinction between the two. I think Charbonnet seems to talk more about crime, I suppose, than Cantrell does. But other than that, I don't see a lot of difference between the two.
All right. Now, Lamar, I'm looking for a column that you wrote, referenced by another listener, about some white supremacists being involved in this race.
You know, I'm just, the only thing, and I have a lot of respect for Desiree Charbonnet, but I'm a little concerned that she's got the endorsement of the Louisiana Republican Party. Leon Canizero, her campaign spokesman, is a guy named Kevin Stewart. He's the founder of a radically right-wing think tank called the Austin Institute, sort of well-known for the promotion of anti-gay and lesbian scholarship. And then there's this white supremacist on Facebook, a Battle of New Orleans group with 31,500 followers, who's now sponsoring and paying for ads on her behalf. So this, it's problematic to me, and that was the point of that article.
And on the national scene, the President of the United States is now getting some pushback from members of his own party, particularly three U.S. senators, Jeff Flake, John McCain, Bob Corker. Yesterday, Jeff Flake of Arizona said he would not run for re-election, but in a biting speech, he described the president as being reckless and undignified. Dan, is that fair?
Absolutely. I cannot argue with that.
And Lamar, I suspect you agree.
I'm going to agree, and I have a little math for you. Even though they both have 426 days left in the Senate, so the idea that they're done and that they're resigning immediately is foolish. That's what Trump would have people believe. But there's plenty more time left.
Well, Dan, you're obviously a conservative. Is Donald Trump good for the conservative brand?
No, not at all. You know, obviously I would prefer him over Hillary, but I don't really think Donald Trump is in it for much more than Donald Trump. That's my take. I could be wrong, but that seems to be the way I see it.
How will this affect local politics, Lamar? Does this make Democrats perhaps more palatable in Louisiana, which has become a solidly red state?
It could. I mean, we're seeing in our next-door neighbors in Texas, they're folks that are switching parties right now, judicial candidates. I think that it could, and I think there is a real division in the party. Flake and Bob Corker are just two. I mean, there's probably several more of these senators that are secretly or quietly not behind the president at all.
Does that include the two Louisiana senators?
That's a good question. I hope it does, but right now there's no evidence to suggest that.
Well, we thank both of you gentlemen for joining us, Lamar White and Dan Fagan. It's been a pleasure. Thanks for your insights.
Thank you, Jim.
See you soon.
Thank you so much.
We're back after this pause with more Talk Louisiana right here on WRKF. This is Jim Engster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. We continue our discussion with Dr. Laura Cassidy, an accomplished surgeon for many years, and she, for the last 4 years, has been the president of the Louisiana Key Academy. It opened its doors in August of 2013, a tuition-free charter school for children with dyslexia in East Baton Rouge Parish and surrounding parishes, and it's always a pleasure to talk with you, Dr. Laura Cassidy.
Thank you for having me, Jim.
Well, it's good to hear from you. I understand you're in Washington.
I am. I'll be home tonight so I can go to the gala tomorrow.
Okay. Well, we'll talk about the gala. Lots of stuff happening in Washington, too, where her husband is the senior U.S. Senator from Louisiana, Dr. Bill Cassidy. Well, how did you get involved in this endeavor?
I think as most people know, we have a child with dyslexia. We have spent a lot of time and money trying to get her educated. And when I looked at the NAEP, which is the nation's report card reading scores in the fourth and eighth grade, Louisiana scores are really abysmal. And it just really ties to what dyslexia is. I think most likely most of those children that are not able to read in our classrooms are sitting there as dyslexic, and unfortunately they're not identified and not getting what they need.
And many brilliant people are dyslexic.
Yes, many brilliant people are. It basically, dyslexia is an unexpected difficulty in reading in someone that you would expect to read on a higher level, and it's unexpected because they're average to above average IQ. It could be an average IQ to a very high IQ like Einstein, and it can be mild dyslexia or quite severe dyslexia. So the picture can look very different, but we know that it's 1 in 5, so they're in every classroom. And if the teacher or the parents don't really understand what dyslexia is, they're going to just feel terrible about themselves because they're struggling to learn to read and their classmates are just going forward.
Well, the Louisiana Key Academy has served over 200 students, 1 through 5. And did you start sixth grade this semester? Is that what happened?
Yes, we've got 1st through 6th grade. We have 320 kids. And I wish we were getting more of our children in first grade because we know that we can screen in kindergarten and first grade. We know the achievement gap is there in the first grade. Most of our kids have failed a grade or a class when they come to us, and they're behind. So our mission is still to get the word out there, educate people about what dyslexia is, how common it is, and how it's something to embrace, and because often they're out-of-the-box thinkers, very successful, as you spoke of, but school can be quite difficult for them.
And the goal is to have the school at some point go through high school, isn't it?
Oh, I don't know about that. I think if we can go through 8th grade, I'd like to think that we could be a resource for high school to help them give these children what they need. But, we'll just see how that develops. I mean, because obviously our school can't take all the children with dyslexia.
Right. You're fading on us, so let's see if we can, Allie, get her to a better place, and if we can, we will continue the conversation. Well, maybe this is better. Dr. Laura Cassidy, can you hear me?
Yes.
That's a little better, I think. We lost you for a moment, but the gala, I wanted you to mention the gala before we part company. What's going to happen tomorrow?
It's tomorrow night.
All right. I tell you what. I think I may have to tell you about the gala that's tomorrow. And Dr. Laura is in Washington, D.C., and obviously on a cell phone. And sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. But this is a work in progress. It's called live radio. But the gala is tomorrow night. And Dr. Laura, as you heard, Dr. Laura Cassidy will be returning home to Baton Rouge for the Key Academy gala, which supplies funds. This is a tuition-free school, and all members of the community are invited, and it will be held 7 to 10 p.m. at the Crown Plaza. That's 4728 Constitution Avenue. And if you'd like to contact someone regarding it, it's Becky at 931-6580 in Baton Rouge, 225-931-6580. And let's see if we – let's give it one more shot for Dr. Laura Cassidy. You do this you don't do it very often at all, and it's obviously you don't survive without sustenance, but – how important is it for those who have an interest in the Key Academy and dyslexic children to hear more and perhaps participate in a tangible way?
Well, I think, we're our best practice model.
Okay, I don't think that's going to work. So I'm sorry, Dr. Laura Cassidy, but we will live to fight for another day. But once again, if you'd like more information, it's Becky at 225-931-6580. And as mentioned, WWL Television is reporting that Fats Domino, one of the true legends of music, born in New Orleans, February 26, 1928, was 89 years old. He died overnight. Some classic recordings, Ain't That a Shame, Blueberry Hill, Walking to New Orleans. He was around for a very long time and started playing when he was 10 years old. At the age of 14, he dropped out of school, took a factory day job, was working professionally on the local club circuit, and was the beneficiary of one of those big breaks when the trumpeter Dave Bartholomew discovered him. And the rest, as they say, is history. And Ali Baltazar, I know you're a big fan of Antoine Domino Jr., better known as Fats. Let's give a listen to Fats Domino.
I found my thrill on Blueberry Hill. Blueberry Hill. When I found you, the moon stood still on Blueberry Hill. It lingered until my dream came true. Melody, but all of the vows you made are never to be. So we're apart, you fought on me still.
That's Domino. He's a member of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, and he was an early member. 1986, Grammy Lifetime Achievement Award, 1987, the National Medal of Arts, 1998, as a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame at 6616 Hollywood Boulevard. Even did six films in his storied career, starting with Shake, Rattle, and Rock, 1956, and finishing with Twist in 1992. In 2005, Fats received a brief flurry of publicity when his fate in the wake of Hurricane Katrina remained uncertain for several days. The singer and his wife had both refused to evacuate their New Orleans home before the storm hit, but it was eventually discovered that both of them had been rescued by helicopter after the area was overrun by the ensuing flood. By the start of the 1960s, Fats Domino's golden era as a recording artist had ended, but he continued, and he certainly did not rest on his laurels. He continued performing right up to almost the very end, and his prominence in the recording industry is supreme. His final entry into the charts was a 1968 cover of the Beatles' Lady Madonna, a song with which Paul McCartney had made a conscious attempt to imitate Fats Domino's distinctive style. And we repeat, WWL Television has reported that Antoine Fats Domino, who was born February 26, 1928, has died. This date will now be remembered as the day that music died for Fats Domino, October 25th, 2017. A true Louisiana and New Orleans and world legend for his musical greatness. And it started the Fat Man was released in 1950, number two on the R&B charts. So that was 67 years ago. Until tomorrow, for Ali Baltazar, I'm Jim Inkster. Thanks for listening to Talk Louisiana, and stay tuned.
For a podcast of today's show, go to WRKF.org or find the Talk Louisiana podcast on the WRKF app. We welcome your feedback and topic suggestions. Email us at talk@talklouisiana.org. Talk Louisiana is a production of WRKF in Baton Rouge.